I'm so excited that we have Innovate Digital Solutions as a sponsor of HeCast this season. Innovate Digital Solutions provides anything that an office might need, hardware, software, IT, copy machines, things like that. They make an office run more smooth, and they're really good at it. But one of the things that I love about Innovate, their founders, Andre and Katia Brasso, they're people that don't just believe it's important to build a strong business, but also to take that success and build the strong community around them. They really have a heart for what HeChanged is doing. People they love have gone through some of the stuff that we talk about on this show. Andre and Katia both believe that you can build a life worth living, and there are these evidence-based solutions that can help build that life. We're so excited to be in partnership with Innovate Digital Solutions, and HeChanged is better for it, and we hope you will be too. Go to innovate.ca and check them out. Welcome to HeCast, the official podcast of HeChanged It. As always, I am Mike Chisholm. As always, I am excited to be here. This is a crazy episode, okay? And this is a very, very cool episode. I have wanted to have some artists of all sorts on here. Creative thinkers, free thinkers, people who are literally living their best life, living their most authentic life, doing what they love to do. The guy that we have here is, it is a Grand Slam home run in that category. Cool Kojak. And in the hip hop world, you know, I'm a huge music fan, and I like music of all genres. One of the genres that I really, really enjoy is hip hop, specifically 90s and early 2000s hip hop. You know, kind of my formative years. That was music that I definitely listened to a lot. Wearing the PE shirt today for this. Cool Kojak has produced. He came up in that time, a DJ, a street artist, graffiti artist, came up in that time and has worked with unbelievable acts. You know, recently like Flo Rida, Nicki Minaj, Ariana Grande, some of these people, he's in the music industry. He's a producer. He's a DJ. And just a really, really cool guy. And, we've been connected with him, and he basically said, "Hey, Mike, you want to come and pick my brain for an hour? Come on and pick my brain for an hour." And I am so thrilled that I got a chance to do it. And we just talk about life. We just talk about, you know, this. I ask him a lot about creativity because there's a lot of guys out there who are creatives that has never even had a chance to kind of flex that muscle. And I'm really grateful that that Kojak has taken time out of his insane schedule. He's down at, like, he's walking around in this episode on his phone. He's down at his studio that he has. He calls it an incubator for artists, and it's a cool studio. He gave me kind of a tour of it before we hit record, and he's like, "Can I just walk around and make this happen?" Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it, buddy. Echo Bend is and he's got a cool Kojak, all K's, on the SoundCloud, and he's a part of all sorts of different stuff. Without further ado, HeCast, the official podcast of HeChanged It, is proud to present Cool Kojak. We got a cool episode of HeCast happening right now. We are with Cool Kojak, who is, I don't know if you want to call, what are you? Are you, you're not royalty, but you're certainly a second gen, if not of hip hop. You're the guy that kind of took the baton and got into hip hop and went for a run with it. I just am really grateful that you've taken time out of your crazy schedule with all the things you got going on to come on HeCast today, man.
My pleasure, my brother. Thanks for inviting me live from Echo Bend Studios here in Los Angeles.
Okay, and this is cool. I love when I see like Rick Rubin and what he does with that. You have an incubator, and I'm looking, like, as you have shown me the facility that you're in right now. You have an artist's paradise, is what it seems, in the building that you're in right now. Is that accurate?
It depends. If you're looking for harp on your album and drums, harp and drums, this might be a one-stop shop for you.
So it's not drum and bass, it's drum and harp. Okay.
Drum and harp. Yeah. We got that bass covered over here. No, but absolutely. We are. This is like a soft, cozy, warm place for artists, as you can hear them cooing in the background at the song that one of our writers just heard for the first time.
is it styles of all sort? Is it like what kind of music are we talking that you're working on?
Well, you said hip hop, so like, you know,
yep.
I mean, yeah, we were just yesterday we went to our friend Roger's house, and he was the press guy for Bob Marley and for Island Records all through the 70s. And so he has this immensely deep collection of Bob Marley memorabilia and items, and like, you know, the demo tapes from some of my favorite songs like Exodus, and concert t-shirts from the Bob Marley, like, you know, that's just scratching the surface, but it was this overwhelming archive of stuff that would belong to Bob Marley.
Yep.
And that he touched, and you know, just being around that was like, so it was so inspiring. I feel like kind of like inspiration is it's really the gem. That's like, that's magic fuel, you know? So
I do. And
sorry, I just rambled on. I was supposed to be talking about hip hop or something, but
no. we flow. We, like hip hop itself. The best is when you're in a flow. And that's what this conversation is.
Totally. Am I annoying because I'm walking around? Should I sit down somewhere?
I'll sit
in my magic chair, dude. I have a magic chair.
You have a magic chair?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Come on with me.
It's not annoying to me at all. Were you encouraged to be an artist? Because, I mean, I think about, you know, this podcast is a men's mental wellness podcast. And there's a lot of guys who are middle-aged right now who probably have the artist that's inside them that was never, you use the word incubate, I love that word, was never developed, was never encouraged. Were you always encouraged to be an artist?
You know, I wasn't really. I mean, I wasn't, I guess, you know, like encouragement is something you got to think about what that is. What is encouragement? Okay. Is it like, be an artist, you know? Like, why aren't you fucking being an artist right now? Or is it like, nobody is gonna give a shit about whatever you just fucking drew on a piece of paper, and it's great. You made sounds on a tape. Good job.
Yeah.
You know, I think at the end of the day, it's like, I feel like I was seeking approval. I mean, you know, or always resources. I was always seeking resources when I was figuring out that I was like, yes, I'm a creative person, and it's, I don't give a fuck if it's a viable option to be that or not. I'm just like, first of all, me without creativity is like, I can't. It's a meditative release for me. It's a meditative moment and process. And like, I mean, you know, I think everybody needs that. You got to get in your flow state so that you can mindlessly do something that you're good at, you know?
Easier said than done. And I think we have a generation of folks who they don't even know what their flow state is, because they were told to go get a job, go make money, go jump into the system and support the system and make the system roll. And for people to kind of break out of that, to go find, like, my example, like, I've come to podcasting. I love it. I'm good at it. I've got this podcast. I'm the host of the Letterman podcast as well. I host the David Letterman podcast.
You host the David Letterman podcast?
I'm the host of the Letterman podcast as well.
That's sick. Oh,
but
that's
I'm a financial
sick,
planner. It is. It absolutely is, man. It's
cool.
Amazing.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
That's so
but I'm
amazing.
A financial planner, and I didn't start it till 45.
There
and
you
I
go,
didn't
man.
Kind of break out of the system stuff and start going after what I want to do. When I'm podcasting, I'm in a flow state, and it's the greatest feeling in the world.
Yeah.
Time does not matter. Nothing matters when we're doing this.
Totally.
There are so many dudes who don't have an outlet for that. And it seems like you found it early and realized the creativity and then started feeding it without the, you know, when were you able to monetize? You started with cassettes back in the day.
Hell
that
yeah,
is so
dude.
Cool.
Yeah.
And it just feels like there are so many guys out there that have something inside them and they want to get it out of them. You got it early. And it feels like you are grateful for that, and you're aware of that too, that how lucky you are for that.
For sure. I know, you know, because we saw Erykah Badu perform last month, and lucky me again, like that was incredible. And my friend was like, had cool seats, and Erykah Badu said, look,
All you got to do is get in your flow state. Just get in your flow state, and the rest of the universe will fill in the blanks. You don't have to worry about anything else. And then I was like, I've been telling everybody that. I'm like, yep, that is definitely. But you know, then there's the aspect of, well, okay, but you found your flow state. Like for musicians, it's easy. Like we're always sitting there like plunking on some instrument or just like bugging out on something.
Yep.
So that's like lucky us. We're automatically halfway at the space, like Space Cat fucking connecting with the universe. Oh, that's another thing. If we're going to plug stuff later, I made a meditation mixtape, which is on SoundCloud.
Where can it be found? Where is it? It's on SoundCloud?
SoundCloud, yeah.
Okay.
And it's called Space Cat with a K.
I cannot wait.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm jumping in.
Yeah. I just kept it for now, just been for friends and family.
Yeah.
I didn't release it because I feel like Spotify doesn't deserve my business, or they don't deserve to take all the money that my meditation music will generate. It's a bit too, dear to me for that madness.
You think about meditation right now, he changed it as an app. It's a men's mental wellness app. That's a startup, and it's growing and doing its thing. You think about like Calm and Headspace. There's like meditation. It's almost like there's an awakening out there to that concept. Have you always been into meditation, or is it something that you've learned along the way?
No. I just kind of got really aware of it not too long ago. I mean, it's always been in the zeitgeist, right?
Yeah.
But I never really, I guess it was the pandemic. That's when I did do like a TM thing. I did TM a long time ago, like 10 years ago, I did TM.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was cool. I got out there. And then my friend Julie, who's here, had a meditation. She was like kind of my meditation OG, really. She started the meditation school in Santa Monica, and that was amazing. And there was, you know, she had the bowls and group meditations and like these cool spiritual people that came and did, led some meditations. And like, I went to like the underworld and a couple of those. And yeah, that was cool. And then And then my friend, Michael, who teaches meditation at UCLA,
mm-hmm.
and Michael Collins, who's a filmmaker from Worcester, who made an amazing award-winning film about this band from Egypt. The lead singer's gay, and he was like, basically the band couldn't play in all the Arab world because he's gay, and they had to move to New York. And it's like just a pretty intense look at that picture.
It's an amazing perspective.
Yeah, totally. You know, I mean, like we always have to be grateful, you know, every day for everything, because there's a lot of things that, you know, are worth being grateful for in our lives, you know? So just a little reminder, gratefulness. I think that's a very important practice when you look at life, is just tell yourself why you're grateful about whatever is in front of you right now. Whoever you're talking to, even if they're annoying the shit out of you, be like, well, they're annoying me because this has something to do with the way I'm reacting to what's going on. And so let's not let my reaction escalate this, but let me reassess my point of view.
Yes.
And operate from that place to put the perspective of gratefulness. In the minute, you got to be, you know, it's like a quick draw McGraw, you know? But to talk about the flow state, I mean, let me ask you a question. Do you think that, like, everybody has a flow state, right? Everybody has?
I think so.
Uh-huh.
But they don't know what it is. And I think that we live in a time and a place where you're really lucky if you find it. Because there's a lack of introspection that's out there. A lot of people don't go do the work figure what theirs is.
Right. So, okay, now that we're talking about this, and we're both people who are into wellness, and, you know, I've, modeled my kind of trajectory of my career. I've always been working with artists and coming up with ideas and trying to make big statements and trying to and also doing, like, make impact and make projects. Where are you going?
Just to get something out.
Okay. Okay. All right. Just keeping tabs on everybody. And, and you know, okay. So I was just going to wonder, like, who, what's the examples of people who do have a flow state?
Well, I mean, this is why I love musicians so much. You know, going back to like, okay, let's talk about Letterman. I don't know if you've ever met Will Lee, who was a bass player for Letterman. I think I met Will Lee once. I wouldn't be surprised. He's kind of met everybody.
Yeah.
Over the years. And I went and saw him at the Bitter End, at the end of last year, and watching those guys play, and you just, I love watching a band play where it's almost like they're in a different place, you know, and it's they get into it and suddenly it's like
they're not looking like at, I say, the stuff time, around the room anymore.
Nope,
yeah.
Nope. Everything stopped. Time stops. Yeah. Everything just kind of, and it just feels right. And there's a harmony that has nothing to do with the music that's energetic that's there.
Yeah.
And I think if somebody is playing a sport, they can feel it sometimes. It's when people are working out. Sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, it could be a physical exertion. It could be an expression of love. It could be writing. It could be, you know, that's the creative side of things, obviously. I think there are people who solve problems, and that's how they feel it. But a lot of folks just don't do that work. I don't think we're encouraged to do that work. I think we're encouraged to do what society tells us to do, to take part. And many times that leaves a huge void in people. So for me, like when I'm super curious about you, when you're producing people versus creating music, creating art, is that all the same for you, or are they different flow states for you?
Creating art or music or producing people?
Yeah, if you're producing, that's a different thing than if you're creating music versus, you know, if you're doing a graffiti example. That's a good question.
I think, you know, here's the difference, right? This is something to think about. Like, okay, for my flow state as a creative, I'm in the zone on my own, right? So when I'm like making music by myself, later I'll be like, I don't know how the fuck I did that. I don't even remember doing it.
I love that feeling.
Yep. Even like just now, we listened to the thing we did last night. Yep. And it sounded, and I was like, holy shit, I don't quite recall doing that, you know? But then if you're like engaging with other people, like, I don't know if that's where a flow state can actually go down, because how do you maintain a flow when you got all these other people and their wacko energy fucking coming at you? You know what I mean?
I think some people's flow state is collaboration.
Really?
I do. I love collaborating with people. I love that. Like that. My flow state is conversation. And to me, that's a back and forth, and it's a beautiful little kind of a verbal dance, I guess.
You could talk forever.
Forever. This is my third podcast today. Yeah, I'm an endless third one today.
Damn.
And I'm so excited about it, and I'm so present and enjoying it so much. And it's all I think about, wanting to do it again. And I think about going back and being a financial planner, and I almost want to shoot myself sometimes. Even though I enjoy it, I enjoy helping people. That's something I like. I think that's sort of quasi-connected to my flow state, because I help people.
Mm.
But really, I realized a couple of years ago that this is it. It's conversing. It's listening to you, trying to understand and take your perspective and apply it with mine. And to me, it's a beautiful melding. So I think people do collaborate, and that could be a flow state for certain people. Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. That's interesting. Yeah, I was being very subjectively analytical. I think, you know, sometimes when we start to it's hard to be objective all the time, you know? That's another thing to kind of really challenge yourself about. And it's like, that's a key to openness, I think, you know?
Yes.
Because like I was just subjective when I said that, like, oh, why do you want people coming at you when you're in your flow state? And it's like, that's just purely me, because I'm like a bit of a reclusive, what do you call it? The opposite of an outgoing person.
You're an introvert.
There it is. I am at the end of the day. I did the analysis and it was like, you know, everybody's like, oh, I love Kojak and Kojak, like, oh, Kojak, blah, 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 you know, and it's like, yeah. But then at the end of the day, I'm not like, okay, let's keep going. I'm like, get everybody, take a step back, please.
Yep.
And just quiet time is for me is so anyways, that in itself is a luxury, you know, having quiet time. So I think we got to be grateful for the luxuries we have in our life.
Well, gratefulness is a silver bullet. We talk about it on this show all the time. And another thing that you talk about openness. One of the things that when it comes to men's mental health these days, especially guys like Gen Xer men, a lot of them have not learned about vulnerability. Yeah. And the thing that artists have, a silver bullet that artists have, is their expression of whatever it is that they do, whether it is a visual media, whether it's a musical media, whatever it is, writing. That's a vulnerability right there. That it's something that's enviable, but it's not necessarily visible. And it's a beautiful way to kind of get yourself out there a little bit, like to get the things that are inside you out. A lot of the time artists feel that way. Have you always felt that? Did you always express yourself that way?
I didn't know this was gonna, can you explain that to me again?
I look at someone like you and I'm in awe of it. From early on, you're creating these bodies of work and getting these things out of you.
Yeah.
And it just, it's, you know, it, to me, it's extremely impressive and it's therapeutic. It's a vulnerability that comes out that, like, have you, for example, like the vulnerability part, have you, do you care what people think of your art? Are you like, or is it, I just need to get it out there and it is what it is?
I think, you know, when I'm involved in commercial, you know, projects, which is for me is mostly most of the music stuff. Hey, what's up, dude? Cause, I can look at these guys. So they need to get their training wheels off. Get them training wheels off, dude. Guys are too old for training wheels. Come on. But they're out here. That's good. I'm a bike coach. I'm a youth biking coach. Matter of fact, I was so good that my second son took the training wheels off himself.
Really?
So, yeah.
How old is he?
He's about to be 6. His name's Luigi. he's pretty awesome. But yeah, I think, you know what, like, I don't know, it's crazy to just look back on, you know, I mean, it was just kind of like music was the only thing I really wanted to do. And it was like what I just was on a fierce mission to be able to do it better always. And, you know, it was a search because back then, like, there was no internet or anything. So I was just, you know, it was a fucking struggle, man. It was extreme struggle. But I think people should afford themselves the struggle. You know, I think it's like, get ready to fucking struggle. Like, get ready to have shit suck for a while. And after shit sucks for a while, it's not going to suck that bad. You know, just as long as you're not like smoking crack. You're going to be okay.
That's
you know?
Not productive.
That's the sucky part. You can't get, you know, but, you know, just take risks and like, what's the worst thing that can happen? You know, you get bad credit, whatever. That sucks. But fucking, you know, you take risks. You get rewards. You know, I think that's the important thing to understand about the universe that I'm like becoming more in touch with. It's like, and you know, I'm not the only person to ever think about it. Obviously, people have been talking about, even Cat Williams was talking about it on his rant where he was like, he's like, I want to be God's best friend. So that's like, I was like, yeah, I want to be God's best friend too. Like, how can I be God's best friend? Well, you're God's ride along. You're the one down in all these situations. He's omnipotent, he's omniscient, but he's not here, you know, on the street, like staring at me.
Yep.
And I am. So I got a ride for him or her, it, the yep. universe, you know?
Yep.
What's up, Busta? And, you know, what would he, how would he, if she, you know, was, were here, if they were here, would they approve of my behavior in this scenario, which is possibly challenging if you include an ego or two, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's a really cool approach. And I think about that all the time, you know?
You talked about two things. You talked about the struggle and you talked about gratefulness. And yeah. my wife and I wrote a book together a couple of years ago, and we've always talked about what the next book would be. And the title of it is Grateful in the Grind. Because it's, you know, starting something like this.
Buddha.
Totally. And easier said than done. But, you know, you think back to the struggle, the things that build you to those who are successful, many times they just pine for the times that they were in when they were building what they were building.
Yeah.
And but in those times, you know, it's very hard to have that perspective of gratefulness, of the fact that these are the good times. You don't really know that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Of course they're the good times. You're alive. You know, you're mm-hmm. fucking alive. These are the best times. You're alive and you can, you know, whatever you can do, you can still do it. So whatever you got left, use it and be, have as much fun as you possibly can doing your shit. You know, we incubate here. So I bring artists, and I've done it for years with household names. I, you know, was involved early in their lots of artist careers, and, you know, I don't have I don't have any enemies in the music industry, yeah. which not a lot.
Not
of
everyone can say that.
I don't hear anybody else saying that shit. You know, I'll say it, and then you hear people go, mumble. Hey, Brian Lucy, the man. 5-time Grammy Award winning Atmos mixer right there, our neighbor.
Right on.
Yeah, swagging. But I don't, you know, I don't. Accolades don't move the needle for me. I got to be honest. That's not what's
not
important.
At all.
No, I mean, it's not. You know, what's gratifying and what is when something you made affects somebody in a positive way, and then they tell you about it or show you in some way that you're something you made. You know, and it's whatever. It just resonated with somebody else. That's special.
Can I ask about a specific one with you that I think might be you?
Yeah.
I'm a fan of mashups. I'm a gigantic nerd. Like I'm a large child. I'm not really a man. Okay. I love comic books.
You look
always
like
have.
A man. You
well,
sound...
I appreciate that. I appreciate it.
You had me fooled, but then again.
Excellent. That's the
goal. The best of us do. Sips tea.
Yeah, exactly.
Brought to you by Fender.
Into okay. the Spider-Verse.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hell yeah, dog.
People have asked me about my favorite movie was last year. Yeah. My favorite movie last year was Across the Spider-Verse. I can't wait okay. to see what Lord and Miller are going to do with the third one. But the first one.
Yeah.
There is a part in the middle of the movie, which I think is you. I'm a mashup fan. I love mashups. I love clever mashups, especially. I love the you know, where you take something nostalgic, you mix it into a new way and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The graffiti scene, where it was taking all of these old hip-hop songs and putting them together in a new way, that was you, right?
Hell yeah, dog.
That scene, okay, to go back, that scene affected me. I can remember exactly where I was the first time I saw that scene of that movie and listened yeah. to that. And I immediately wanted to go online to see if I could find a way that it was in the theater.
Right.
The moment I got out, I'm like, I need this for my vehicle. I need these songs put together this way, like this, because you took elements of my childhood. You took elements of nostalgia that just, and it came back and it absolutely, it flabbergasted me. I love that mashup so much.
Dang.
And it's you taking something old and making yeah. it new again and that's shiny right. in a new way.
Yeah. Which is
that
what hip hop is.
That must have been incredibly fun. Totally. That's exactly right. Exactly right.
Yeah.
You know,
man.
You put a new spin on something, right? And then you Absolutely. And you make it new.
Absolutely.
I loved that. And oh, for anybody dude, who hasn't seen that scene, that, they need to go and listen to that music. It was so good. It
Thank
was
you,
so
brother.
Good.
Thank you, brother. that was a very special, like, universe giving me a kiss on the head moment. Just being able to do that and being in the right place at the right time and having all those cool records at my disposal. And it's a graffiti scene in fucking Brooklyn. What? And he yells, yeah. Brooklyn. I'm like, shh. Oh, dog, what? This is Spider-Man is in Brooklyn bombing graffiti, and I'm doing the Mega Mix mashup for that shit.
Exactly. Hell yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Were you limited? So could you cool. use anything? Did it have to be Sony music? Did you have any?
Oh, so the way it started was my homegirl Spring Aspers, who's the president of music at Sony Pictures. She's super homey. She's been in, you know, obviously been around in music for a long time, and she was in the Beastie Boys video back in the day. Like, she's Spring's fucking cool. And she used to live with Cypress Hill, apparently, like, way when they were really young. And anyway, she was like, yo. And I was like, yeah, what's up? So then there were two directors, two Bobs, and the two Bobs came over. And one Bob was like Surfer Bob, who had like a big pickup truck and huge surfboards in it and stuff. And I was like, ah, fucking yeah, Surfer Bob. And he had long hair. And then the other Bob was much different, but they're both Bobs. And they were just like, yeah, we don't know what to do and blah, blah. And of course, on an animated picture, the first thing that gets finished is the audio. So there's a super time crunch because you can't draw to what's not locked. They lock sound first. So, all right, very time sensitive, you know, and it's Uncle Aaron's mixtape, right? So Uncle Aaron is the bad guy, right? But we just know him as Uncle Aaron, who's an old school hip hop head. Yep. So he's rocking his, you know, he's going throwback. He's taking his nephew bombing in the New York City subway tunnels. He brings a radio, like, they're just doing it up fully in the tunnels. And he like rocks his old school tape. So they're like, yeah, we got a list of things that we can use. So I'm like, oh, let me see that list. And I just immediately start picking out all the smashies that I know will go together. It was like, I said, Run DMC was on there. I was like, yep. Yep. Oh, well, first it was like, they're like, yeah, we want to use this Run DMC break. And I was like, okay. And I was like, we should use Run DMC, Mary, Mary, Why You Bugging for Spider-Man, you know, with the bugs and everything. And you're watching this bug. So I was like, I'm going to scratch up bugging while the spider is crawling around. And I was like, okay, word. So I got that. So then we cleared Run DMC, Mary Mary. And then I could use the drums and the beat from that too, which was awesome. So then we cleared that whole song. So then that one was good. And then I'm like, we need Apache. We need like bongo breaks. We need the incredible bongo band, like old school break dancing. You know, it's kind of like if he has the cassette and the radio, it's probably, you know, you would bring that shit out and break dance back in the day and have your mixtapes in there. So got to have like that upbeat. So then, you know, Jungle Brothers, one of my favorite groups of all times. I love the Jungle Brothers. If you haven't listened to their first album lately, it's worth just listening because it's just pure hip hop. The beats are simple and like, it's just knocking, and it's they're legends of rap music. So I got to sample that, and I can't wait to meet them someday and tell them that. I've never met the Jungle Brothers, and they're still out there, and I love them. And
they're on your list.
Yeah, they're on my list, man. We're doing a lot of artist collaborations here now, so I'm going to reach out to them. I actually, one of my groups, the Bali Boys, has a hook and a beat for them. So we're going to try to do a collab, and we do have a studio here. So anyways, thanks for asking, bro. It was so fun. And then just, you know, fine tune. And then I just made the mega mix of my dreams. And it's like, you know, it's Run DMC, LL Cool J, Sly and the Family Stone sample from the Jungle Brothers. There's the Incredible Bongo Band, probably missing some other things, but everything I had, you know, they were like, okay, all right. Hold on. I was like, no, we're going to need slow down, toots. And I was like, okay. But it came out great. I'm uncredited in the movie for that, by the way. So you're a real head for picking up on that one. I don't know how you did that, but it's probably out there somewhere. But I was uncredited. I did a bunch of stuff on that movie. Some I got credit for, whatever. My name's in the credit, so I'm cool with that. But I didn't get credit for the credits. I think there was clearance issues and there was Oh, you know what it was? It was when you make a recording for a movie, you have, there's a composer, right? The composer on a film is hired to create for all music creation. So everything has to go through the composer. So if you do something that's not through the composer, it's a, either, you know, it's either violating the terms of a composer agreement, or they just have to license something. So I think I created it and then they licensed it from me. And
I gotcha.
Yeah. So then that was not, anyways, whatever. Movie shit. It was so fun.
Yeah. Well,
thanks for saying that, dude.
It feels fun. Oh God. Are you kidding me? Like, it feels fun when you listen to it. So everybody go back and listen to this thing.
People hit, hey Bobby, people hit me up and they're like, dude, I know that was you. And I'm like, what's your email? And I have it. So I'll email it to you. I'll put it up on my SoundCloud. I mean,
please do.
SoundCloud. Okay. So
please do. It's incredible. That was actually a thing I was going to ask you. No, that's okay. You'll come back. So I'm a fan of all sorts of different music. One guy that I have loved, that I just worshiped in the 90s, and I still do to this day, is a guy by the name of Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails.
And
Trent, I mean, you got this guy who's an incredible musician, you know, makes his mark on rock and roll. Then he moves over and also is a producer, also, you know, moved into movies.
Yeah.
Just different genres, but a very similar path that you have taken. I'm curious, do you enjoy doing the movies the same way that you enjoyed being in the studio with other artists or creating beats or doing, you know, DJing, things like that? Is it an evolution of you and what you've done, or is it just more of the same, just in a different way?
Well, you know, there's a freedom to working with artists where you can, you know, really create a world, you know. I was hoping film composing would be like that. It has to be the right dynamic for that to work in a certain way. Because you got a lot of cooks in the kitchen when there's picture involved. So that usually heightens the pressure, and it lowers the ease of collaboration, because there's, you know, a language barrier with people in the visual world. A lot of times they want to do this or they want something like this, but they don't even know how to express it. So anytime I talk to a director, I write this shit down and then I stare at it for 20 minutes and I'm like, what are those words mean? What does that mean? Like, what does that sound like? So, and it's a lot of translating. But with an artist, you know, we just like totally bug out and have fun. But, you know, the thing that I do that I think is really important is cultivate, vision and cultivate, you know, a concept of expression and on a, you know, utilizing this magic of music, which is this emotional language, you know, that can really impact anybody. You know, let's paint a real picture and like make it all sound cool and similar and, you know, like make some art, make something that's real and meaningful, and find out why it's meaningful before you make it, you know? So really do a lot of, you know, just thinking and living and observing, and it usually comes. Like, we just went to the beach for 2 days and we made the craziest fucking music on the beach. It was just nuts. For a little while we were just hanging out, whatever, and, you know, drank a beer, ran in the sand, we were like, ha ha, and then all of a sudden like this wave of creative stuff flew through the room. It was like windy and like right by the ocean, and it was just like some inspiration flew in the window. It was like magically all of a sudden these things happened and we're like, whoa. And I was like, I want to write a song in 20 minutes, you know, that's like, we should just, and then boom, like right after our big idea came, we wrote a song in 20 minutes. That's so badass. It's super badass. It's like kind of like the Breeders or Liz Phair or like some like cool, you know, like cool rock girl who's got swagger and is a little dangerous and cool. So you just, you know, I think you gotta allow yourself, and that, like, to not circle back to what you're saying about like how people find their flow state, you know. I think it's kind of the same approach what I'm talking about now, about incubation, creative incubation. Is like, it seems like a lot to ask, but if you can give yourself X amount of time to go somewhere and not be around anything or anyone, mm-hmm. go and, you know, whatever you want to call it, a retreat, a vacation, to be around nobody and no media, and just take a chill pill.
Yeah.
And allow yourself to reset. You know, that's kind of like a, you know, like a psychosomatic reset. You know, get rid of all the things that are impacting your psyche, and that's all you have to do. And don't worry about then what am I supposed to do? Just do nothing. Yes. You know, the more that you can do nothing, the more you're going to get closer to where you need to be.
Well, it's funny you talk about meditation, and so many people, they miss the point of it because they think, I'm not doing it right. It's like, no, there's no such thing as a bad meditation.
Yeah,
it's okay when your mind does this, just bring it back. Like, but we, the world that we live in right now just does, what you're talking about right there is the exact opposite of what most people are encouraged to be 100% connected. They want to be attached to social media and they can care what other people think and all of that kind of stuff. And what you're talking about, I think more voices need to get that message out there for people so they can find their authentic self. They can build that creative endeavor that you're talking about. They can make the decision that they want to make when it comes to whatever it is in their life that they need to do. And so few of us are encouraged to do that in everyday life these days.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it would be nice if there was like, you know, there's a couple examples like... I don't know, birthright, right? Israelis have birthright, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like some point in your life, you can fly to Israel, right? And like, and you're just going to be there. And it's like, we should have that for your spirit, you know, mm-hmm. like a spiritual sabbatical. Reacquaint yourself. I mean, especially when you're young, it's hard to have any awareness of that. So some encouragement and help at that time would be great. I could have benefited from it for sure. You know, just getting grounded, I think, is super, super important. And it's, you know, it takes a little bit of space and time, but that's all it is. I feel, you know, just space and time, quiet. Mm-hmm. I think a lot will happen. Yeah.
A pilgrimage to find yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know? And you know, I live in Bali, so when I'm there, it's kind of a world like that.
Yeah.
Where you can probably just go tuck away behind a, you know, coconut tree and no one will bother to look at you. You can just sit there all day in a rice field and maybe see some rice farmers, but it's a good way to not, you know, fall prey to any distractions.
Yeah. I was talking to a Letterman. I was talking to a Letterman guy the other day or a former Letterman guy. And he said to me, he goes, you know what, man, sometimes you just got to unplug from LA and,
oh my God.
So you know,
true. Yeah. So
how often do you stay in Bali? Like time of year, are you there? What, 2 months, 3 months, the majority of your time, you just come back for projects?
Yeah. I commute here for projects and stuff like that. Yeah. I tell you, it's more affordable than living in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Way more affordable. It's not even a comparison. That's another problem that we're looking at and just, you know, hoping to retool part of the music industry. And we have some great people on our team and yep. I'm in this movement to really, I don't know if how many music fans are aware, but basically musicians, specifically songwriters, are not getting paid from streaming. There's yep. no revenue in it. And there's barely any for recording artists and producers yep. and stuff. But it's meager. I mean, you know, back in the, it's just the problem is that all this revenue is getting generated, billions of dollars per quarter. So you're yep. talking about, you know, $20 billion a year or something. And it's the most, you know, it's the most fruitful time in the music industry ever.
Yep.
And all the corporations are taking the money and the creatives are getting fucked.
Yep.
And when I listen to the radio or I listen to songs or whatever, I'm listening to the creative people, not the fucking, you know, tech platform that took 80% of the revenue. So yep. there's a huge problem that needs to be solved there, because it should just be, it's never been, you know, even when I was growing up, it was extremely struggling for me to try to follow a career or whatever, or just try to make music. Like, you gotta,
yep.
you know, and it shit ain't easy. And it, you know, so.
I'm glad you went down this path, because I was going to ask, one of the questions I had for you was, you know, art and commerce. You
yeah.
know, you got this thing inside you, and then you're trying to communicate it to others. You're trying to, you know, to get it out there. You're trying to make a living, trying to eat, trying to, you know, sustain yourself. And the idea of art and commerce mixing, sometimes can be ultimately impossible for folks. And it seems you're a guy who wants to help folks who are, like, you talk about the idea of an incubation, you know, you've got a place where you've got these artists and you want to try and make it so commerce can figure itself out so they can create. And that's not the easier said than done many times. I'm sure you saw that growing up and being going to the place that you are. I mean, you talk about gratefulness. I can feel how grateful you are. How many artists aren't there that end up staying on the street? And not I'm saying living on the street. I'm saying that's where their art lays. It lays just locally or it doesn't get to that place because they can't get the commerce thing going.
Right. Yeah, that's true. It's hard. It'd be cool if it was easier, you know?
Yeah.
Artists are not typically, and musicians are not typically the most, you know, business-minded individuals on earth. So building a little infrastructure that allows fans and artists to engage, you know, I think is super important, because that's the economy that always works. And people want to support and they throw money and the artist catches the money and it's like everybody's happy, you know? You know, because, I mean, artists don't really need more than, say, $50,000 a year if you're, you know, making music and putting it out and getting paid, like you're going to be okay. You know, so that'd be like the minimum. I want $2 million a quarter, man. But, you know, artists are sensitive people. They, you know, they deserve like this, you know, everybody deserves a special treatment, but some people could use it more than others for sure.
I'm super curious about your perspective. It's going to be extremely fascinating about, because you talk about that, but then we talk about what hip hop is and hip hop so much is the representation of the baller. And I mean, it, I guess it's really, really broad to say that. Like, I mean, we were talking about Public Enemy early before we hit record. Yeah. Those guys never put that out there. You know, KRS-One never did that back in the day, but then it turned into this thing as it grew.
Mm-hmm.
And much of hip hop now has to do with that idea of, you know, you're hearing $50,000 a year, sustain yourself so you can do your art. That's not necessarily the message that hip hop is throwing out there these days. But
that's true.
You know, it's an interesting dichotomy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like the, you know, one of the core elements of rap has always been braggadocio. And so,
yes,
you know, MCing started that way, where you just talking yourself up and then dissing the sucker
DJ,
MCs.
My DJ's the best. I'm the best. Yeah, the DJs, exactly. You know, before even the MCs even.
Yep, yep, that's right. And all that culture came from Jamaica, sound system culture of Jamaica, yep. Where you'd have a selector and a DJ and a MC and like the whole squad, you know, and actual sound system. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, it's also humans, you know, humans are they're just crazy people. Humans are fucking crazy people. But yeah, that's definitely like an element of hip hop that's always been there. It's kind of like the braggadocious aspect of it. Yep. You know, the whole culture. I mean, it's crazy. We were just laughing about it because, somebody asked me when I was at the Bob Marley room and they're like, oh, what was your, you know, impactful albums? And I was like, well, you know, like I have 3 or 4 albums before hip hop and then after hip hop, that's it. It was just like, there's before hip hop was AC/DC and
yeah,
The Who and Bob Marley and the Wailers Burning. Right.
Yep.
So I was like, already had some, I had the good bass lines, but then it was like, somebody played Planet Rock at my school dance and it was fucking insane. Never heard or felt anything like that. And it was like kind of dark in the gym, you know, in the school dance. And it was like electrifying. You could feel the electricity in the room. Like it was just like supercharged. It was so crazy and everybody was going nuts. And hip hop was like that. It's not really like that now. You know, there's no, like, there's still the drops and there's still people go crazy and whatever, but it wasn't as, it's like, it generally hip hop was electrifying back in the day. Like a new song would come out and you would hear it loud for the first time and just bug out. It would just, everyone would go crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know if hip hop's like that anymore, you know? It's just different, you know, but
I think there's hype for stuff that's coming out, but I think it's a different type. Like everyone's curious about the new Kanye stuff that's about to drop and, you know, but much of it is, okay, what's he going to say? I think with hip hop early on, it was, what's it going to sound like? Because the sound was so different and it was such a, it was groundbreaking at the time. And don't get me wrong, it's evolved and they're still amazing. Like sometimes I'll still get taken away when a certain beat will do it for me,
like,
and
what?
And a certain producer.
What beats? What's on your mixtape? Like, run down the first 5 cuts on your mixtape
of recent stuff or of old? Because I go
back
to old stuff. See,
I want a mixtape.
Okay.
Whatever's
we're
cracking.
Going by the time I get to Arizona, Public Enemy.
That record goes super hard.
That bass line and that. I just absolutely, and then from the same record, there's a song called "Shut 'Em Down," except the Pete Rock
remix.
Down.
Oh yeah, the Pete Rock remix of "Shut 'Em Down" is smooth.
That is
that's
one of my very,
one.
Very, 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 very favorite of
Word,
all time.
The Pete Rock remix of "Shut 'Em Down" by Public Enemy. There's an
there
amazing
is.
Story about that too, where Pete Rock
really,
yeah, he was where did I? He told it somewhere, and he was saying that. They came in, they were like, yo, we need Pete Rock in studio. Yeah. And he was just making a beat. And then they came running in. They're like, this has to be done by the end of the night. And he was like, what the fuck? And it was to shut him down. And he had to make it in like 30 minutes. He made that remix.
I'll never forget when I first saw that or heard it. It was on a Public Enemy released a video cassette. Live at, and I forget where they were. I want to say it's the Apollo, but I don't think it was the Apollo. But anyways, it was a New York concert, and they started playing "Shut 'Em Down," which I loved. I love the original. But then halfway through, they stopped it, and this new crazy version of it finished the song. And I was like, "What the hell is this?" And then when the internet blew up, when Napster and all that stuff hit. You know, I go scouring for these things. And when I realized that it was a remix that is actually sort of available, I don't even know if they put it on a single.
It was on the B-side of a 12-inch.
It was, okay. Yeah. I mean, as a kid, I mean, I didn't have access to that stuff. I wish I did, but anyway, so yeah, I love that very, very much. Nothing but a G thing is probably, wow. I mean, I, That song absolutely, and a whole bunch of Dre stuff did the same thing for me. It put a feeling in me that doesn't happen as much with the modern stuff. And I don't know if it's because I'm older, but I do get affected by music. I do still get affected by it. It's almost a religious experience.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, and maybe it is because we get old, and that's what it was. You know, my parents, they liked some of the newer stuff, but they would go back to their old Beach Boys or their old Beatles or whatever, right? But those Public Enemy nailed me. Like, I just absolutely love the stuff that the Bomb Squad was putting out. I loved all that stuff.
The Ice Cube.
Craziness of it. Oh, I loved. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
I just saw this a clip about, man, just how the Bomb Squad made their beats. You know, like, I worked in that studio with Pete Rock one time. So Pete Rock was making a record for Rob O, who was his cousin. And he worked out of Green Street Studios in downtown New York City on Green Street. Yep. And in Green Street, they had a huge Amec console. It had 128 inputs, 120 different sound sources, plus like two tape machines, right? So 48 tracks, which now on a computer, whatever, you can have a billion tracks.
Sure.
But back then, yep, that was a lot. And it's all analog. It's a
big deal.
And they had all their drum machines set up and all the samplers and synthesizers and everything. And like, it was intense, man. And yeah, I could talk about stuff like that endlessly. So
well, one day I'm gonna have you back, and I'm gonna prepare it now that we've kind of built in the rapport here. One day I'm gonna have you back.
Yeah, we got a little rapport going.
And I'm gonna build up a whole bunch of things that you can knock down. That'll be a lot of fun. We'll get specific and we'll go granular, because I dig this shit very much.
We'll definitely like create some you know, some mixtape playlists. We'll talk about. It'll have to be like a special edition podcast, because I don't know if every listener is going to want to hear about our favorite movies, and then we talk in detail about, you know, hey, Paulie, you gotta light the match, you know.
But, you know, just like you guys on the beach last night, you don't give a shit about the audience. You give a shit about the process and what you're building. And that's when you say that to me, let's go and build a list, and let's come up with some mixtape stuff and whatnot. That to me appeals. And if people find it, great. If they don't, it doesn't matter, because we've had this amazing back and forth and experience to it. And that's exactly what we've been talking about.
Right.
You know, the commerce does not matter at that point. What matters is the idea that we're having a communion of sorts and a connection of sorts. And, you know, you've seen one of the things that you've seen, you go back to that Spider-Man deal, you think about artists like Girl Talk and whatnot with the mashup, the idea of the mashup. You think about Jay-Z and Linkin Park. That's something that I love the idea of meshing hip hop and metal together. Love that. I'm a huge Faith No More
Remember
fan.
Remember Judgment
back
Night?
In the day.
The Judgment Night
okay,
soundtrack?
Okay, you took it out of my. Okay. You literally, dude, on my mixtape, I was about to tell you Faith No More and Booyah Tribe, Another Body Murdered. That's on my mixtape.
That's one
of the songs. Love that shit.
Yeah. Booyah Tribe.
Woo! And Faith No More.
That whole album is crazy. There's like
Pearl
Helmet.
Jam's on it. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Helmet, which was probably the most head knocking, like, I don't even know, new metal band of the night, like mid 90s, early mid 90s. They're fucking knocking. And Judgment Night soundtrack is a soundtrack to a film. Yep. And whoever, I forget, but whoever music supervised it, like, was like, oh, it's going to be all mashups of metal bands and rappers and oh, there was that one. And then, do you remember there was another one that was smooth like that had like the Brand New Heavies was on it and a bunch of rappers, like it's gonna take me a second to shake the bong water out of my brain, dude. But the Brand New Heavies was, anyways, if you look them up and then see their collaborations with rappers, you'll find there's a whole mixtape of funky bands, or was it maybe just the Brand New Heavies with a bunch of rappers, but like Grand Poobah's on there and like all these really funky, awesome rappers. It's really, really dope music. But yeah, the Judgment. What's about mashups, dude?
You just gave me a gift in that. I'm gonna go down a rabbit hole tonight. And that's the beautiful thing about the internet. You know, when you think about I think about the culture, the cassette tape culture, the mixtape culture, where there were no rules to it. It is life on the beach, like you were talking about the other night. You know, screw commerce, you know? I mean, you might get caught by the cops if you're selling these mixtapes, that kind of a thing. But it was all about the music at that time. And I feel like art and commerce always are butting heads. It feels like what you're doing is trying to create a place where artists can get together and figure it out and in the name of the art. I love what you're doing. I appreciate it very much. Can you talk a little bit about your collaboration with David Cho? That fascinates me.
Oh, yeah. So I knew about Cho because I was like, you know, I've painted graffiti, you know, back in the 90s when I lived in New York City. I hung yes. out with these kids who were graffiti reds. My music mentor, graffiti mentor, is Louis Gasparo. He was like painting on subway trains in the 70s. He was doing burners on the double R's and the double whatever. Anyways, out in Queens. And so he was like, Kojak, fucking come here, blah, blah. And we, you know, and then we painted. And I'd always been into graffiti, but like then he like really put me down with some style and technique. Yep. And then I was like, oh shit, here we go. And so we started doing pieces and bombing. And like, I did a lot of graffiti. I did painted tons of freight trains across America in the late 90s. Yep. When I was on tour, and that shit was always fun. So, that, and then to get to do the Spider-Man graffiti scene was just like icing on the cake, you know. Yep. That made it icing. But I forget where I was going with that answer.
David Cho.
Oh, Cho. So I knew about Cho. Because graffiti, and then he just like we met him at the Chateau Marmont. It was like back in those days, I was really on some LA ridiculousness. It wasn't really me. I was just hanging out, being myself. But I was with people who were going to all the hot spots and like getting the, you know, we're making huge hit records.
There's fun in that stuff. Like there's fun in there. Absolutely.
Oh, it was fun. It was fun.
Yeah.
You know, can't do it forever.
Yeah.
And it's better when someone else pays when you're in places like that.
Did David Cho have the Facebook money at that point?
This is like 2011. So
yeah. Okay.
He was still kind of, he was making his first DVD. So, so we did the music for his DVD. I have like, you know, a bunch of songs in there, and he was like, yo, I really like the music, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, cool, dude. And then I found out he liked making music and played the drums. And then he started a band with my friend Keyboard Money Mark from the Beastie Boys and some other people. It was like Stevie Q. It was like a punk rock band, and they went crazy. And if you look at, you know, and then they did, Cho just went off, and then he was going across the world with some crazy people doing wild stuff and like making shows. And then I went and saw him when he had like a huge warehouse. And where he did he had a podcast with like some woman who's works in the adult film world.
Yep.
And we went down and that was fucking nuts. Was after the Facebook money. And I was like, Cho, you're bugging, dude. And he's like, I'm bugging. And he talked about it on his podcast. So it's no secret, but he was like,
oh, no. Yeah.
He had some demons at that time.
Yep.
He was dealing with some demons. So I was like, run for the hills, man. You know, so he did. He went to Phoenix for a while and really, but he got a little skewed. You know, when all of a sudden he got a $200 million check,
yeah.
You know, he went fucking bazonkers a little bit with certain things. And, so, you know, we all do it. He got himself centered again. And then I saw him at the farmer's market and he's doing great. So he's an amazing, such an introspective, of such like a fucking like yep. open book kind of guy and like yep. amazing artist. What a fucking incredible painter, but like generally like very caring person. So I got, and he's always trying to crack the code on himself. He's, you know, we know it's a struggle, but he's working on it. So that's a good you know, inspirational insight just to see somebody who's struggling and is an open book, you know.
Yeah.
Because everybody's feeling that way, you know? We got a lot of work to do with these human beings, man. We got a lot of work. It's not as hard as it seems, but we just got to, you know, we need to straighten a few things out. There's you know, little ego scenario that's going on that's not serving humanity as a whole.
Yep.
You know, there's a meme about it where the, you know, where all the aliens are like, I'm not fucking going down there because you know, every 5 years there's a nuclear explosion or some fucking crazy shit going off. They're like, that shit looks, they're not well. Those beings are not ready for us.
Bunch of monkeys with shotguns.
Pretty much, you know. So what's it going to take? I mean, I know what will work and what will make it happen.
Yep.
Would primarily be DMT and, you know, smoking the toad. Like everybody needs to smoke the toad and lay down and chill out and spend some time doing nothing and, like, you know, just get centered. Relax. Smoke a lot of toad, man. Seriously, get all the way in. You know, that's like the quickest journey. I've tried many of the available medicines, right? Plant medicines for ayahuasca. I did a bunch of ayahuasca with indigenous people, and I did.
Did it change your life?
Yeah, totally.
We've had a couple folks on HeCast already. One guy who runs a wellness retreat center.
Yeah.
That they get you to do a bunch of work before you get there. Mm-hmm. And then they go through it with you, and then you've got exercises afterwards, that kind of a thing. So yes, life changing to say the least.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally. It's really just like a you know, a searchlight inwards. And it's like, here's what's going on and why you behave this way. And, you know, you're reacting to some shit that's inside of you, and you gotta let go. First of all, the most important approach to growth is letting go, forgiveness, you know, release, just release.
Yeah.
You know, people walk around holding on to all these, you know, notions and old bad energy, and it's, and then you can see it on them, you know, and it's like, hey, that's, you're carrying around a lot of extra unhealthy stuff with you. And it's not easy to get to that point. A lot of people really can't talk about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, plant medicine's like it really is just like a slingshot, you know? And I love it. I mean, I will eat mushrooms anytime I see them. I love them. I'll eat. The other night they pulled them out and I was just like, wah! I love mushrooms, and I think they're so great for humans.
Do you create differently with them?
Yeah, creating while eating mushrooms is, I've done it. I've done it many, many, many fucking times. It's different, but I think ultimately, you know, artists are always like, oh, I need to smoke weed first to get, you know, I need to have a drink or blah, blah, blah. And really, that has nothing to do with your creativity. Your creativity is abundant. It's all about your access to the creativity. So if you're allowing it to flow or if you're blocking it.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why people medicate. It's not to spur the creativity. It's to shut down all the craziness that's in front of it.
Yeah. If there was somebody who's, you know, 20, 21, 22 years old, and they've got that creative spirit in them, but they've also been told to go get a job and you got to pay rent and you got to do all these things. Would you have any counsel for that person?
Is this for, you're asking for a nephew or what?
No, I'm thinking, asking. Well, could be. Yeah. No, you know what? I got a 24-year-old nephew that's kind of exactly where he is.
Yeah.
He's trying to find himself and he is a creative, but he doesn't really fit into the structure. Again, it's that art commerce thing, right? He's you know what? I do have a nephew, literally.
There you go.
Shout out, Alex. Hey, buddy.
Shout out to Alex.
What are the, do you have any counsel for somebody who has these creative things but they don't know how to use them?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's like, don't let other people's thoughts on your ideas permeate your passion, right? So it's important to make sure that this is really what's important to you and what you want to do. And, you know, I always say it. It's like, if you can make time for yourself and then make time for yourself to do that every day, it's going to make all the difference in the world. And, you know, just.
Oh. Are you still there, buddy? Oh, man, that's the good stuff right there. Can you hear me, Kojak?
Okay, we're back. Okay. Oh, okay. There's some kind of glitch that makes the audio go all slow at the beginning of the. It happened both times, so I don't know. Anyway, sorry that
we should sample it and process it and turn it into a beat.
Totally. Let's make it into a heater, dog. We got the whole studio here ready to rumble.
You know what? You have given us so much time here. Like, okay. We are recording, but I'll kind of catch back into things again. You are fantastic. Like, you are such a cool cat. And I'm so grateful to have had this conversation with you today. Like,
thanks, man.
You're so cool, dude. Oh, man. I just appreciate that. You're such a pure, I love what you see is what you get, people. And when you find out that somebody out there who is a creative that you love is that type of person. And I love uniqueness. I think that's why I love Letterman writers so much, is all these Letterman writers that are now my friends because of the show. They're such weird people. And I just love the different takes that they all have. You, dude, you have such an awesome take. And we need people like you in this world so much, dude. And I just appreciate you
very, very much. Appreciate that, man. Thank you. Yeah, I'm definitely.
No.
You know. I feel the love, man. I appreciate that. And, you know, I'd like to thank you for having me on. And, like, you really blew me up with the whole Spider-Man thing, man. That was pretty cool. So I'm going to put that up on my SoundCloud so that it's up there. I don't know if it's up there right now or not, but yeah, that was dope.
If folks want to find your SoundCloud, is it just a cool Kojak, all K's?
Yeah, it's K-O-O-L. Oh, man. And then hyphen, I think, K-O-J-A-K. Yeah. It's really not the best. Let me look while we're here.
Okay. No problem.
Unfortunately,
and then Echo Bend, really, right?
I'm sorry?
And then Echo Bend as well, right?
Yeah. Okay, so yes, it's cool-kojak on Earth here on SoundCloud. So look it up. And Echo Bend is our film, a video production and music company. And we're here. We also do post. We're here in Los Angeles. And we just won the VMA for a Nicki Minaj video last year. Over here in the music building, we have a lot going on. We just were recording in Ireland for a while and working on the new Kate Nash album, which is going to be insane. She just signed a deal with Kill Rock Stars, which is a legendary label that brought us Bikini Kill and Elliot Smith. And we have a bunch of cool stuff going on. I'm working on some movies, but always, what up, dog? Always incubating talent and growth and supporting the artist struggle, which is real in the music world.
I'm gonna finish off here. I gotta ask you. I got one last question about you and it's, I'm gonna set it up by saying the one thing that you did say earlier that I want to make sure we impress upon people who might be creatives that are trying to figure out their way in the universe. You talked about like a relentless work ethic and actually working and busting your ass for it. And if it has to be outside of work or it has to be whatever, but bust it and go for it. Be consistent with it. I can clearly see that you are that guy. You are grateful. In the grind is still real, even though you've had this measure of success, this body of work. What I want to know is, who are some people, what are some things, goals, people that you want to work with, projects that you want to do that are still kind of on that bucket list for you, Kojak?
Oh, man. Well, like we were saying, I would love to do a Jungle Brothers song.
Yep.
That would be really fun. Yep. I would like to work with Dolly Parton. That would be amazing.
Love that answer.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like she's a hero of mine. She's so cool. She's just, you know, class act. She's really a class act. I was talking to our friends of ours. We're talking about
working with Anita Baker. We were talking to her for a while and hung out with her a bunch and listened to music. That was so fun. She's amazing. Love Anita Baker. Public Enemy, you know. I mean, you're just asking me who's my favorite artist. You know, Chuck D called me once on my phone, and it was like the best day ever. I was so excited because he was my hero when I was young. He's, you know, barely older than me, but all of my heroes when I was a kid were like my age. It's crazy, but that's, you know, hip hop was really all young kids back then.
Because you were watching it grow right in front of you.
Absolutely. Yo, MTV Raps.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? The videos come out, got to get new kicks and a windbreaker.
You're talking to a guy who has 44 pairs of Jordans. I know exactly what you're doing. Have you ever spray painted? Have you ever done up a pair of kicks?
I did. I did some sneakers. They're not easy to paint on. You got to prep the surface and whatever. But I painted some shoes and boots when we got busted. Me and the Jamios got busted in Sao Paulo, and we were tagging on this huge building that was a government building. And the cops, when the cops show up, they pull their guns out. So all these cops pulled their guns out, and I was like, fuck. And we're like, okay. They're like, don't worry, you have the passport Giotto. And I was like, what? And they're like, you got the golden passport. Because, you know, at the time, my band was super popular in Brazil. Yeah. So they're like, you know, talking me up to the cops. And then it started pouring. So then we all had to hide under this little thing, us and like a bunch of cops. And there's this female cop. And she's like, I saw you on TV. I saw you. And I was like, did you? And she was like, yeah, I saw you on the TV. She's like, I like that. I like it. Blah, blah, blah. Gives me her number, you know, and everybody is like, ah! And then they told that story at like this thing. I don't know. There's a lot of adventures when you, you know, obviously with music, if you get involved in music, and it's really like this crazy world where you can be, you know, you could just be disregarded and whatever. And then all of a sudden you're like the life of the fucking party. And then, it's just a wild ride. It's a roller coaster at all times, which is good. What up? There's a crow up there. What up?
This has been a blast. My wife and I are, I think we're coming down for a Letterman event in May, in LA for the Netflix is a Joke Comedy Festival.
Cool.
So when we're down there, I would love to connect if possible. But either way, we're going to bring you back on the show. We're going to do that mixtape idea. I love that idea very, very, very much.
Cool, do it.
And you know what? I believe conversation inspires creativity. And I feel extremely inspired after this. I know there are going to be people who feel the same way. Kojak, you rock. Thank you so much for being on HeCast today.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate awesome, you, brother. Man.
Oh, I appreciate you too. Right back. All right, brother. I just adored that conversation. I hope you can see why. I know this was a bit of a different episode than what we normally do, but that's the thing about creatives. And I think we haven't spent enough time talking about, you know, we've had stand-ups on and things like that, talking about the process and whatnot, but having full-fledged artists on here of any medium, I think we're going to do more of that. Because at the end of the day, we're all about trying to find these things. And the commonalities are introspection. What is it that makes me tick? What is it that gives me purpose? What are the things that I wish that I could do? You know, it doesn't matter about time and money. It doesn't matter about, you know, some of these world constructs that are around us right now. And I just appreciate so much someone like Kojak being in this world and the perspective that he has and how he makes me think differently about things. And not in a, you know, there's... in a way that just makes me more thoughtful. I don't know about you, but I just love that there are people like that in this world. If you haven't downloaded the He Changed It app, what the heck are you waiting for? Go to hechangedit.com. You can check out what's going on with this movement that's being built. Download the app, whatever your persuasion. Hechangedit.com has the link to it. That has been another episode of HeCast, the official podcast of He Changed It. My name is Mike Chisholm. Go change something.